Welcome back to the David Curtin Show on today's News Talk, TNT. I'm absolutely delighted to have with me today Isabel Vaughan Spruce, who in my mind is a hero for freedom and of the pro-life movement. Isabel is a campaign director was for 40 Days for Life in Birmingham, and also co-director, sorry, for March for Life. And I've been on the annual Marches for Life in London for a number of years. Isabel, really good to have you on the show here.
Thank you for having me on, David.
Now, great to have you. And you are somewhat famous yourself because you have been challenging these dreadful things, in my view, that have come in called buffer zones around abortion centres. I don't call them clinics because I don't consider that they are places of healthcare. But you've been arrested a couple of times. Can you know, just so people who don't know exactly what's happened to you, can you tell people about the times when you were just praying and you were harassed and arrested by the police, and what's happened to you in those cases?
And I guess I should start by saying, in a way, I'm doing what I've been doing for the last 20 years. It's not that I've suddenly started going outside abortion centres because there are these buffer zones around. For 20 years or around that time, I've been going to abortion centres and just either praying there or offering help and alternatives to women who are considering abortion. And many, many women have been very grateful for that help. And sometimes we meet women who've had abortions, and we're just able to direct them to where they can find some healing afterwards if they're experiencing some negative effects of that. But recently, well, it was actually the September before last, we had a PSPO brought in Birmingham. So that's a public space protection order, which creates like a buffer zone around the abortion centre in Birmingham that we've been praying outside. And it bans certain forms of behaviour, certain forms of protest. But I've never protested outside abortion centres. I go there to either pray or to offer help, as I said. So I felt, thinking about this in my own mind, that certainly to carry on silently praying couldn't possibly be breaking any PSPO, because surely that's one of our most basic rights, to be able to think what we want to. So I went and silently prayed outside the closed abortion centre, and I was arrested. I was locked in a police cell for quite a while before being questioned as to what I was thinking about, what my prayers were for. I was eventually taken to court alongside a priest, Father Sean Gough, who was likewise being accused because he had a bumper sticker on his car that read "Unborn Lives Matter." We were both acquitted within minutes, but about 2 weeks later, I was rearrested for exactly the same thing, silently praying
Wow.
outside the abortion centre in exactly the same spot. This time, I was 6 months. I was investigated, or at least the police told me they were investigating me for 6 months. Some of that was spent on bail. And eventually, after 6 months, I was told it wasn't going anywhere, the case. But police have continued to come out and given me various tickets for being there. So we still don't know where this is going to go. And I'm not the only one. We know that there's cases in other places in England where people are having to actually go to court because of either their silent prayers or just for offering to have a consensual conversation with people.
It's absolutely appalling to me. I mean, here you are, you're a Christian and you're just praying on the street, on the public highway. You're not causing anyone any harm. And you even said you were doing it when the abortion center was closed. So, you weren't harassing anyone anyway, but this is the narrative that they're creating, is that you've been there for many, many years. I know people who are outside the abortion center in Ealing. That was one of the first places to bring in a PSPO to ban prayerful vigils and people offering help to mothers. And that's all you were doing, is offering help. And then what happened in Ealing with this crowd of very, very aggressive leftist feminists came in and started making a load of noise. And then that created the narrative, oh, well, there's lots of noise, there's lots of hassle around there. We need to create a buffer zone. It's a classic example of radical leftists creating trouble and then saying, well, the solution is to get rid of the people who are doing good, which is you and other people, isn't it? I think is absolutely deplorable.
And we had a similar problem in Birmingham, not the same as Ealing, but you can certainly see the parallels to what you were just saying. You know, my volunteers were frequently abused by some locals in the neighbourhood. And this might be verbal abuse, like swearing and just being screamed at. There was physical assaults on people that we sometimes even caught on camera. We would have cars racing down the street towards us at high speed and veering off at the last minute. Men would be saying to young women that they were going to be followed home and things would happen to their families. Property was stolen. Just the most horrible situations that were happening pretty much on a daily basis. And yet we talked to the police about it and they said, well, if you don't want to be assaulted, you don't have to come out of your house, do you? And like you say, you know, clearly they could see that the amount of abuse and harassment was going up in the neighbourhood, but it was us who were the victims of that. And actually bringing in this buffer zone did nothing but move that to further down the road where my volunteers now pray outside a church, which is just outside the buffer zone. And yet they've still been assaulted there. They've still been sworn at and spat at. And, you know, the harassment has still continued against them. And actually what these buffer zones have done, they've actually fostered a real sense of intolerance in that neighbourhood. Because many of those people now, well, I was going to say now they feel they're above the law. They do seem to be above the law, some of them. Because like I say, we've shown incidents of physical assault to the police and still nothing has happened. So it doesn't really solve the problem, these buffer zones. It actually just moves it further away and intensifies it.
This is absolutely appalling, isn't it? You are the ones being harassed, not the people that say they're being harassed. I mean, I don't know if anyone in 23 years, I know a lot about the people who are outside Ealing. They've been there for over 20 years, like you have in Birmingham. Not one single complaint of harassment has been made by any woman going into an abortion centre. All the harassment is by radical leftists and whatever, anti-Christians, you know, anti-pro-life people harassing you. And I think it's utterly appalling that police are not upholding the law when you are in danger and you've been a victim of crime, and that they are not upholding the freedom of speech that we have, or the freedom to protest, which is, you know, hopefully everyone can agree on that, whether they're pro-life or not. Anyway, Isabel, don't go away. We're just going to have a quick news break and we'll be back in a minute and we will talk more about this very, very important issue. This is today's News Talk TNT. Welcome back to the David Curtin Show on today's News Talk TNT. Isabel Vaughan-Spruce is with me in the show. Who's just been telling me and you and explaining how she's been harassed by police for praying outside abortion centres on the public highway in England, something that I don't think should be happening at all. Isabel, let's just look at a little bit more about this, because these things are new, these buffer zones, as they call them. They've been introduced in England. I think they've been introduced in Northern Ireland as well in a different way. I think they're trying to do them in Scotland as well. But this is, we are different here in the UK to other countries around the world, because in the USA, everyone is allowed to go and say whatever they want outside an abortion center, to offer help to mothers and to continue to do that. Even countries like Germany, that are traditionally being considered more liberal than us, you know, in terms of sort of pushing the liberal progressive agenda, if you like, allow protests or vigils or prayers outside abortion centres. I mean, why is it that there is this huge attack on free speech against pro-life people here in the UK?
Yeah, and it, like you say, it is an absolute national disgrace. I find it quite an embarrassment, really, to have to say this is what's happening in our country, in the UK, and other countries can hardly even believe it, really, that the UK, which, like you say, used to be somewhere where we would certainly associate free speech with, has now almost made it criminal to have certain thoughts in certain areas. We're not even talking about speech. It's literally our thoughts that are being censored. And I know recently I was part of a session where they were discussing this up in Scotland. And I saw the Minister for Public Health and Women's Health, Jenny Minto, really floundering, trying to justify, you know, why silent prayer was dangerous. Because we can see there's an agenda going on there that pro-lifers have actually become sort of like some kind of social pariah, you know, for whether it's generally Christians, just for simply wanting to pray on the streets. And this is really, really concerning. And I think, you know, one of the things we have to look at is how the language that we use has really got us to where we are. You know, we've talked for a long time about the protests that happen. And I know, I actually don't really know anyone that protests outside abortion centres in this country. I'm not saying it doesn't happen in any places, but in this country, it's generally just peaceful vigils that happen. And we know that in 2018, there was actually an investigation done, you know, what was happening outside abortion centres. And it was shown that it was largely just peaceful vigils that were taking place, and that there was no need for anything further to be done. And yet we see that the language that's used whenever there's articles written about my vigil, you know, we see this really negative language that's used. And it's not really surprising that when people do come for abortions, they might actually be feeling quite nervous and quite afraid because they've believed what is written about it. And I feel quite sorry for a lot of these women that are coming along thinking that someone's going to be shouting murderer at them and running along the street after them and, you know, forcing them to have leaflets they don't want and things like this. And of course, when they get there, nothing of the kind happens. But that doesn't stop the fear being there because they've believed what's been read. And this is what we need to do is look at the narrative that's being constantly pushed about pro-lifers and dressed up in very, very negative terms and try and get a little bit more real with what's actually happening.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's smearage and it is propaganda and it is negative coverage. And, you know, it seems that the mainstream media, a lot of them, and even some politicians, you know, who talk to these committees where they talk about pro-life, you know, people who are just trying to help women to keep their children, to keep their babies. And they're saying a prayer is dangerous. I mean, it's laughable to me if that wasn't so serious, because these are actual people who are lawmakers, who are on committees, who are then going to go and make decisions and vote on laws in this country to impinge on our free speech. But another thing that disturbs me about the whole issue here, and, you know, I'm 100% pro-life, you know, I need to declare that. Obviously, I'm the leader of the Heritage Party. We're a completely pro-life party. But I think something that disturbs me and disturbs everybody is that there seems to be some kind of move to increase the age at which an abortion can take place up to the moment of birth. And you've had politicians, you know, in Westminster actually put amendments, try to put amendments on certain bills to do this. I mean, how does that make you feel as someone who is pro-life?
Yeah, and again, I think this really comes back to what I was saying earlier about language and the important part this plays. You know, like you say, there is a push to make abortion up till birth for any and every reason, but it's not called that. It's called decriminalisation, because that sounds a lot more palatable and we'll get a lot more people supporting that. But if you actually ask the average person on the street, would they support abortion up till birth for any reason? No, they would not. And in fact, the average person on the street wouldn't support what we've got. A lot of people don't even know that, you know, a child that's diagnosed with Down syndrome can be aborted right up until birth. Equally, for a cleft palate, something that's very easily treated, that can be aborted, like I say, right up until birth. And some of these children are aborted right late term into the pregnancy. Again, we have another form of discrimination. Either it is a child or it isn't a child. And after 24 weeks, you know, most children aren't allowed to be aborted. But if they've got some kind of disability, they are. What terrible discrimination is against those with disability. You know, when we try and pretend that we're so disability aware and, you know, we wouldn't discriminate someone, you know, not allow them to have a job because of their disability, certainly not because of a cleft palate, and yet we'll end their life because of it. I mean, how do we justify a position like that in modern day Britain? It's utterly disgraceful.
I think that people in future centuries are going to look back on us here and they're going to say, this was a horror. that happened in the 20th and 21st centuries that is equivalent to the horror of slavery that happened in the 17th and 18th centuries. You know, and this was brought in. I mean, just a final question to you. This was brought in on the justification that it would be legal, safe, and rare. But it's not safe, is it, to the child that's being killed? And it's certainly not rare. I mean, the scale of abortion in this country is something that I don't think people actually truly know. I mean, do you know the sort of figures, the latest figures for the number of abortions that happen in the UK?
Well, this is the huge concern, David. Actually, nobody knows the figures now because of pills by post abortions, the amount of pills that are just being posted out to women. We've got no idea whether they're taking them or not. And if they are taking them, at what stage of pregnancy they're taking them? Are they taking them past the stage they should take? Who knows? Because we've got these pills by post at home, do it yourself abortions. We've effectively gone back to the back streets where women are actually left to work out the date of their own pregnancy. They're not even given a scan. They don't even speak to a doctor on the phone, let alone see one in person. These pills are just sent out through the post and they have to take them at home, you know, by themselves in their own bedrooms or bathrooms, and they're left to dispose of their own dead child. And we're calling that healthcare. I mean, talking about euphemisms, what a terrible euphemism that is. Like you say, obviously the death of the child, but what do we think that does to women's health? You know, to see your own dead child. And we all know that if a woman's having an abortion at 8 weeks, that you can see it's a human being. And I've spoken to these women who've seen their child in the toilet bowl or in their bed.
Yeah.
The damage that does to their mental health is absolutely traumatizing, to say nothing of physical consequences. I mean, that is horrific. But I guess the question we have to ask ourselves is, what are we doing about it? You know, it's all very well to point out the problems about this, but are we just merely bystanders to it? Are we just, you know, thinking that how wrong this is? I think this actually requires us all to do something, and that will differ for each person. But otherwise, we become complicit in this if we're not doing something about that.
I totally agree with you, Isabel. You are doing incredible work in pointing out, you know, the terrible injustice of this new law where people are not allowed to pray, even pray in your head, or give help to mothers who could save their children in abortion centres. I'm obviously involved in politics, and our policy would be to abolish abortion in every case except when the mother's life is in danger. And I do understand the latest figures are 230,000 abortions carried out in the UK every year. That's just in abortion centres, and that's not including the pills by post that you spoke about. It is horrendous, and it needs to stop. Anyway, Isabel, thank you so much for joining me. We could talk so much more about this. I hope you'll come back on the show and we can talk about all the other things we didn't get to mention today. This is today's News Talk TNT.